Hi Sandra. Perhaps it's practical if I talk a bit about the relation between quantity and quality, because it's also the relation between things and no things. And I would like to talk about that because there are a lot of people who are sort of mesmerized into the belief that things are real and no things are not real. Actually, the opposite seems to be the case. And I'd like to talk a bit about how, in my mind, I was able to shift the gear and realize that in thinking, we should not make things king, but rather realized that ideas are thoughts that we held on to or that we hold on to, and in a way that we come to understand that in the process of mind, we have all kind of thoughts and ideas and notions and concepts coming by, and that these different forms of thoughts are as important and as relevant as any other thought or any other thing, because in the way we look at things in the world outside us, we are actually operating things that happen within us. So all the time that we are talking about the reality of the world around us, we are actually doing that from realizations in the world within us. And I've come to understand that there are a lot of problems, also problems in cultural development, problems in individual development, where the, how can I call it, the relationship between things and no things is totally ignored. I've already spoken of tetrionics and the way tetrionics points out in a very simple and very clear manner that all things are formed out of no things, and that the three-dimensional tetrions, which are the foundation of matter, in fact it's the only form of matter, is a cluster of quanta. You need four quanta to make one tetrion. The quanta are in the plane, they're flat, two-dimensional. In that sense, they are not real. They are never things. But they are the foundation of things, the tetrions, which are three-dimensional and which are the basis of what people consider to be real. I'll come back to that juxtaposition of two-dimensional, three-dimensional, the quanta and the tetrions in other talks. And at this moment, I want to focus more on our experience of these differences, and specifically about the difference between quantity and quality. It has always puzzled me how quantities and qualities are spoken about, but that it is never made clear how fundamentally different quantities and qualities are. In another talk, I have already addressed how quantities and qualities are totally different, because quantities correspond to the kind of numbers that are used in the algebraic Peano number system, where one is the smallest number, and the more of something you have, the larger the number of that thing becomes. So you have one apple, two apples, three apples, and so on. And then in the Peano algebra, which is definitely an algebra of things, you can then work with the numbers because you already know what things you are talking about, apples or pears or something. And in that sense, in the Peano algebra, you are using quantities because you are using a reference to objects. But those objects are isolated from their environment. They're taken out of their context. Qualities, however, are quite the opposite of that. Qualities are always in context. You cannot have a quality if you isolate something. In order to have a quality, it must be relational. It must be embedded in a setting. It must be part of something larger. And qualities are therefore also what is being addressed in numerology, which is also using number systems, but in the numerological system, the number one is the largest number for the simple reason that oneness is the only thing that we can work with. Oneness is the wholeness of everything. The universe is oneness. And at the moment that you have two-ness coming in, it means that you're not looking at the oneness as a wholeness anymore, but you're in a way separating it out. You're in a way separating yourself out of it. You're discerning, distinguishing yourself from it. So in threeness, you have even more parts. So there are more relationships, there are more complexities, there are more qualities. So I've come to the simplistic realization that quantities refer to things which are taken out of isolation. They are no longer part of a context. They, in fact, no longer have a meaning in an environment. And when people work with the numbers of that piano algebra system, they are, in that sense, working with meaningless numbers. And for me, that was also something that I had to learn to grasp, because I had been in engineering school and I had learned how to work with meaningless numbers, numbers without qualities. And that had become so usual that when I was confronted with this notion of numerology, I was confused. I didn't quite know what to make of it. And it took quite a while before I realized how Peano algebra refers to quantities and numerology refers to qualities. Algebra refers to elements taken out of their context, and numerology refers to the number of relationships within a context. And in system theory, there is something closely connected to that. It's called the per variable and the trans variable. And it is what is used in the measuring of voltage and current. Voltage is measuring by having an electrode on the one side of something, and then on the same cable, on the same wire, maybe on the other side of a different radio element, you have the other lead of the measuring device. And in that way, you can measure the voltage or the voltage difference over the wire. And by doing so, you can see that if you measure on one place and another place on the same wire, that essentially there will be no voltage difference. But at the moment that you have a resistor or a coil or a capacitor in between, you will see if and what the value of the measured voltage is become then. If you want to measure the current of things, you need to actually take things apart. You need to isolate them. You need to pull them apart. You need to put your one electrode for the measurement on the one side of the cut that you've made, and then you need to put the other electrode on the other side of the cut that you made. So again, this is where you need to disconnect things in order to be able to measure it, and that is called the per variable. The measuring instrument need to be put right within the measuring circuit, and the trans variable needs to be measured outside of the circuit. So the trans variable is something you measure from the outside. The per variable, current, is something that you measure from the inside. I already knew about that relation between the per variable and the trans variable, and in system theory this has a very rich meaning, and I can certainly recommend that people look into system theory, because it's such a switch pocket knife for the mind, and also a general connecting principle in all branches of science. In other words, I would describe it as it is the portable version of alchemy. It actually shows how the four elements of alchemy can be understood in mathematics and physics and science and in fact in everything. It's just a different formulation of the same concept that we live in four dimensions and those dimensions have qualities. But the qualities are by the relationships that are involved. And for my development of thinking, it was out of the understanding of the difference between the pair variable and the trans variable that you measure on the outside or that you measure on the inside, that I also was able to wake up to the relationship that actually three-dimensional is three dimensions. That is three lines pointing in three different directions. And two-dimensional is two lines pointing in two different dimensions. Together they make a plane rather than three dimensions making a volume. But you can also have this one-dimensional phenomenon, or event, circumstance, condition, in which you have points going one direction or the other. But then, of course, you also have the zero-dimensional of just the points. And I realized that in the pair variable and the trans variable, you're actually cutting a line or connecting a line. You're getting outside of it, and then what you perceive of it is, let's say, the charge, the voltage of the thing. While when you measure inside of it, you get the involvement or the experience of it. In that sense, the trans variable or the measuring of the voltage is, let's say, an outsider description. And in the pair variable, you need to actually get into it. You need to get the insider experience. And those are very different dimensions. So when in electricity or electricity, I did a talk on that, you're dealing with voltage and amperes in what you can then measure with your little voltmeter, which is also an ampere meter, which is also an ohmmeter, and so on, you're not really getting this understanding that you change your involvement. It was much later that I realized that I needed to introduce, to add a new part in mathematics, or the mathematics of physics, and I called it referon analysis, and it was based on specifically this kind of difference between being the outsider or in the insider. In mathematics, this is known already for a very long time, and it is there known as the difference between the Euler reference system or the Lagrange reference system. In the Euler reference system, you're an outsider, you're an onlooker. You are able to describe things, and you will perceive fixed things in motion. Again, it's about things and thinking. It's a different kind of mentality, a different kind of perspective than Lagrange reference system, because there you are moving along with the system. And then you see how, from the perspective of the system, the environment seems to change. One of the descriptions which are used for that the Euler, it's a German descriptive perspective, say it's the fisherman sitting on the pier looking at the waves come by, and the Euler perspective is an outsider descriptive, not involved, while the Lagrange reference system is that of the surf rider on the wave. And again, it is that difference between the outsider or the insider, the objective and the subjective. And I had already realized that in this Western culture, there is an immense confusion about the meanings of the word objective and subjective. And even the words themselves, with their Latin origin, show that something is really out of place in the understanding that is involved. Because object, which is used to describe a thing, is actually something which has been objectum, thrown upon. So you throw it on top of something, op, on top of, jectum, to throw. In the same way, subjectum or subject is sub, is below. So you throw it under. The word understanding connects to the word subject, thrown under. And the object thrown on top of is basically the outsider's view. But those words refer to, say, a master and slave kind of situation. Also, the outsider and the insider situation. And I realized that in the use of the word object and subject, there was something very much amiss, because the word object, objectum, throwing upon, and subjectum, throwing below, is essentially the difference between riding on the train or being thrown under the train. There's quite a marked difference between them. And so when we talk about objects and subjects, as if the object is the thing and the subject is the human, then by the words, the human is something, somebody, who's become something because it has been thrown under. The subject is an underling. And there we see that in the words there are implicit relationships which come back to this notion of quantity and quality, that when people are subjects, they are enslaved or dehumanized or objectified. And that's the most strange part of the system, that a subject is in fact an object by a different perspective. So I realized at some point that even though everybody's using those words object and subject, that the words themselves indicate something quite contrary, and that by the formulation description of the words we cannot use them because their meanings are wrong. And it is from that kind of explorations of the meaning of words and the etymology, the origin of words, that I realized that I had to come to a different level of understanding. And at some point I did a paper called The Subjectivity of Objectivity, which addressed that when people talk about objects or objectivity, object if it why, as if things are objects, the notion of objectivity, which is to look at things as objects, is very much corresponding to that Euler German outsider descriptive approach of things, while the word subjectivity is taken to represent the French Lagrangian participant involvement experience of things. By relating that to the words quantity and quality, we get a better understanding of the qualia of things. The qualia are the characteristics of things. And yes, we do have a choice if we want to look at things as quantities or if we want to experience things as qualities. And the whole purpose of that paper on the subjectivity of objectivity was, on the one hand, to show that science is not scientific for the simple reason that objects of science are not real objects. They're objects of language. They're language constructs, which means that they're mental construct encoded in language. They're not real. So when scientists say that they are dealing with objects, they're not dealing with physical or real objects. They're dealing with representations of objects. They're actually doing magic. And magic is about the use of symbols to represent something which it is not. Magic is very much based on the principles of magic. Besides, it's based on the principle of magic. And we need to acknowledge that. We need to not deny that. And so we need to realize that when we talk about objective science, We are only talking about the science of objects, but that is actually the science of the description of objects of language. It is the science of code representing something which we might have looked at some point, but we are not looking at it now. Instead of looking, we're looking at the map and not at the territory. Again, it's system theory which pointed out that the map is never the territory. And in that sense, we need to realize that when scientists are referring to scientific objects, they are iconifying things. This is at the level of thou shalt not make graven images, because at the moment that you make a graven image or you make a symbolic representation of something, you might be tempted to confuse the thing with the thing which it is not, which is that which it has come to represent. This really goes very far, because in that same way, a representative in politics does not represent you, but represent themselves. Maybe an idea, but probably another idea than you had. So the discernment or the distinction between quantities and qualities is really important, because only by seeing that there is the outsider perspective of Euler and the insider experience of Lagrange, that you can see how different quantities and qualities are, that there are different dimensions, totally. This is where I was really much helped by Tetrionics. I was helped by Tetrionics in many ways. It's a marvelous creation by Calvin Abraham. In Tetrionics, the notion of voltage and current ampere, voltage is the electrical charge and ampere is the electrical current. And in Tetrionics you can actually see how different they are, and that in the model of Tetrionics you can specify that ampere is a current of electrons. Those are actually particles, and the foundation of particles is always the tetrion. So the electrons are clusters of tetrions moving along an electromagnetic field, while the voltage is devoid of electrons. It is the electromagnetic field itself. In that sense, in tetrionics, you can see that the tetrions, which are the charged particles, are material things, and they can be counted as quantities. You can enumerate them, you can add them up, you can subtract and multiply them, add and divide them, because in tetrions you can have more tetrions together, and once they are clustered you can also take them apart. So at the level of tetrions you can use the Peano algebra. But at the level of the quantum field, the quanta don't have that. Yes, you have quanta, but the quanta are always part of the quantum field. And the relationship of the quanta to the quantum field specifies the characteristics of that specific part of the electrical field, or the electromagnetic, the quantum field, the information field, the radio field that you're dealing with. And in that two-dimensional field, you're then dealing with quanta, which can be clustered, say, back there. In the representation of tetrionic, a quantum is an equilateral triangle. It is charged, it has a plus charge on the one side and minus charge on the other side. You flip it over and you see a charge reversal, which is a phase reversal, which is an opposition of polarization. And that is the fundamental principle by which you can then have charge agreement and charge disagreement, and also the principle by which you can change the polarity of a field. You can reverse the polarity of the field by simply reversing one quantum. Because if you have a number of quanta in the field, they will be plus or they will be minus. Whatever the number of charges are in the field, they always will combine with pluses and minus next to each other, so that on the whole they will be neutral, but if you flip over one quantum, the charge of the whole field will flip over. And in tetrahedrons, then you can see that the sizes of the field will specify if you have just one triangle, then it's a quantum. If you have two triangles back to back, it's a photon. If you have a photon with added quanta next to it, you will have a boson. And in that way, all of the particles which are described in physics, which are actually non-particles, because a quantum and a photon, boson, is not particular, it's in the plane. It is only a qualitative entity, because it is not a plane, because it's not in a volume, it is not an object, it's not a particle. So it's not particular, and it is not a quantity, it is only a quality. It has a charge plus or minus. And with that charge, it has a quality, because it's part of a larger field, yes or no. And I'm bringing up this all these thoughts. For me, they were decisions that I had to take. They were crucial distinctions that I had to make, because I needed to come to that conclusion, which is already implied in tetrionics, which I discovered later, that the world of the particles is not the world of information, that the world of objects is not the world of consciousness. And we actually need to get rid of the word subject. We need to replace that by the word individual. So we have the world of objects and we have the world of individuals. But in science, we have both of them. We have scientists looking at objects and science creating a model, a language, a description of objects, of perceived objects, of descriptions of objects, of models of our perception of objects. So when scientists are doing science, they are working with descriptions as an outsider. But the scientist who is doing the science is an insider. So we have a distinction between the scientist and science, which is the same kind of distinction as that of being the outsider and the insider. The scientist is an insider. That's where we're dealing with the paravariable of system theory. But science, the description of science, is an outsider thing. It's a transvariable. So the distinction is that of the insider and the experience of the scientist, which is a quality, and the model of science, which is about quantities. And those are separate realms, separate domains, separate dimensions. Scientists ignore that. But as a result, they do not appreciate the importance of sciencing. Scientists ignore how much of sciencing, which is the act of creating science, is actually a political, territorial, animalistic battleground, where the ideas of the one and the ideas of the other are treated as if they are objects, which they are not. But as they are treated as objects, they are taken to be exclusive, and that's what you have in the piano algebra of things, that if you have one thing and then you have another thing, you have a new thing. But that kind of algebra of objects stops being valid at the moment that your one thing is a drop of water and the other thing is a drop of water, and you put the drops of water together, and what do you have? A new drop of water. You don't have two drops of water, you have one drop of water. Yes, you can say that the mass of it is different and the size of it is different, but the distinction of it is not. And that is also when you have one drop of air and another drop of air, you realize that you cannot have drop of air because you can only have a container of air. And then within the container of the air, when you bring the containers of air together, you can discover that the pressure of the air changes. And then they say, yes, there's different amount of particles, and there's the number of Avogadro, and there's the laws of Boyle and Gay-Lussac, who describe what happens at the level of air pressures and air quantities. But in fact, we have gone from the quantities of rocks to the quantities of drops of water to the quantities of drops of gas. And when you go one level deeper, you go to the quantity of plasma or ions or ionic mass. And there you have protons, electrons, neutrons. But at that level, you cannot put the two together. You cannot have a proton and a neutron together. You can have a proton and an electron together. You can have a neutron and electron together, as Tetrionics finally explained. But the principles of accountability and countability is very different. And I bring you this up because those are all kind of considerations that I had to work through in my mind to realize that the descriptions of science are very often still interpreted as if they work to the level of things, of the particles, of objects. But the causality of objects is very different, as I mentioned other times too. When you pick up a rock and put it somewhere else, then action and reaction have a principle of causality in it. But when you dip your hand in water, you can take out a bit of the water, but there is no causality in that sense. There is a different kind of a logic that that operates there. And when you dip your hand in air and you move your hand in the air, you cannot scoop out a bit of the air from the air. You can simply only displace air with respect to the air. So where at the level of the physicality of the object of things, you can say that A gives B, then at the level of chemistry of things, the arrow becomes two-sided. It's called a balance equation, and then A can give B, but B can also give A, depending on the circumstances, which is ignored at the level of physics, and which must be included at the level of chemistry, which is why the causality is not one-sided, but becomes two-sided. When you go from the physics beyond the chemistry into the electromagnetic, then you can see that electrical gives magnetic, but in the same amount the magnetic gives the electric. The foundation of the equations of electromagnetism is that there is no causality and there is no balance equation, but there's a direct and immediate equation between the electric and the magnetic. They need to transform. There is a transformation, not an equation, that takes place at that level. But when you go to the deeper level, to the subatomic, the non-particular quantum field, then actually the one thing is the other thing. The quantum is the opposite quantum, because you need to flip it over and then you see that it is the same. So I had to work through a lot of considerations in realizing that many of the things that I was presented with as science and as principles of science, when you apply the principle of science to the science itself, you then see that causality is different if you look at objects, or if you look at liquids, or if you look at gases, or if you look at plasma. They are not the same kind of causalities. And by that same principle, it is then clear that what the alchemist described was exactly that. Causality in physicality is different than causality in fluids, is different from the causality in gases, or ionic gases, is different from the causality in a quantum field. And actually, those differences in causalities are actually described as the difference between the classical theory for objects in matter, which is different from the relativity theory for processes in molecules, which is different from quantum theory, which is that of transformation in atoms, which is different from field theory, which is that of the formation of information in the quantum field. Or the quantum fields. So on the one hand, at the level of classical science, we are dealing with objects, And on the other hand, we are dealing with what conventionally would be called subjects, which I prefer to call individuals, but in fact we could better call consciousness. So when we look at the relationship between quantity and quality, we are also looking at the relationship between object and consciousness. And I'm glad that I'm now telling the story of it, because it took me quite a while to realize that quantities and qualities are in different dimensions. And just as Tatrionic explains, it is as if you're looking at the voltage of the quantum field, or the actual flow of particles of electrons in the amperes as it is being measured. And that means that in the measurement of the voltage, we are dealing with the quantum field, which is a field of pure information. But in the measurement of ampere, we are looking at the movement of particles, which is also always consequential to the movement of the electromagnetic field. In the voltage domain, we are looking at the information field itself. And in the ampere domain, we are looking at the consequence of the quantum field by looking at the particles that are being moved by the field. And once you see that, then you can see that we can connect and correlate quantities to qualities, because then we can see how quantities are objects made out of tetrions, which are inert but which are moved by the quantum field, so that quantities are always identifiable from outside, but they're also distinct from, separate from what puts it in movement. In that sense, in the classical terminology, you would look at the manifest reality of the things that we are looking at and the things that we are experiencing. But what we are not seeing is that underlying quantum field, which in the past was called God. So there's that level of qualities, which would be the level of God, and the level of quantities, which is the level of manifestation, of materialization. And it is in that way that God and the manifest universe were put next to each other in the past, and that good and devil were put next to each other or opposite each other in the past. But we now need to realize that we need to get beyond that misunderstanding and that misrepresentation, and that we understand that the quality of things is how things always connect, and we're talking about the universe as the whole, and in tetrionics you would call that the quantum field. And then by tetrionics you can see how that universe as a whole, that quantum field, can actually curdle, form tetrions, form particles, form atoms, form molecules, form matter. And then you can see how that matter will move in accordance to that underlying quantum field. The clustering and the aggregation and the operations of tetrions as atoms, as molecules, and as matter is part of that same dynamic which you see in the subatomic particle systems, and how they are moved by the quantum field. But we now can come to the realization that the world of physics is as the old traditions describe that, and while I was in the British Library I saw many of those descriptions which all amounted to the same, that the reality that we see is a reflection of and a consequence of the reality that we do not see. And tetrionics now describes that in the terms of the particles, the tetrions, which are moved by the electromagnetic field, which can thereby be clustered by the electromagnetic field, and that's what's actually happening in the cells. The cells are actively using the electromagnetic field. They use the directed flow, they use the circular flow, so that they can move atoms, and that they can reposition atoms with respect to each other. And you need both of these qualities on the basis of the underlying electromagnetic field to reorganize atoms to form molecules, to form matter, which is precisely what the cells are doing. That means that in the cells, we actually see something that is operating the qualities of the field to reposition the quantities of the particles in the field. And now we can see that those are two different dimensions, just as the voltage field and the ampere field are different. Voltage is without the particles, ampere is with the particles. Voltage is the charge field that can move the particles, ampere is the movement of particles as a result of the field. Yes, there is a relationship between the two, but now we also have the understanding of the difference and the connection between the two. And thereby we can see that what we can describe as quantities in the classical physical material manifest scientific model is the complement of what we can experience as qualities in what originally was the religious or the spiritual model. So in that sense we can say that the religious or spiritual models are those of the quantum field and the material model are those of the particles. We however need to make very clear that when we talk about the religion in that sense, when we use the word religions as equivalent for what happens in the quantum field, which is a two-dimensional quantum domain, which is non-physical, which is universal, which is the creator of everything, and which is the mover of everything, we are not dealing with the god which has been created by the Egyptian, which was the head slave holder system, and the god of the Vatican, which was brought over from the Egyptian into Rome, in that sense was still the model of the slave owner, and that's also what is seen in the tiara of the Pope, which is three crowns in one. One claims to be owner of everything that exists, and the second crown is to claim to be the owner of everything that lives, and the third crown is the claim of the soul of everything that lives, and that basically says that the Pope claims that he is the slave holder of the earth. And when you look from the view of tetrionics and from quantum physics, you realize that the quantum field is not a slave owner. The quantum field is the place where all of the information of the whole of the universe is connected and interconnected, that within that field of information in formation there are patterns and patterns within patterns. There's lots of levels of information which are there, and that out of those interactions of information at the quantum level, there are instances in which that information, let's say, flips out of that domain into a new domain. It manifests and materializes. It is as if it is a computation or the computational result of, let's call it, a catastrophe in the sense of the catastrophe mathematics of René Thom and Christopher Seyman, that within the quantum field confluences of quanta in that field can lead to convergences and can lead to catastrophes, as a result of which the charge potential in that field are so powerful that they actually make it possible for quanta not just to flip, but to flip and flip and flip again, and in that way spin out of that plane and form a spin, literally a spin off of that interaction of the plane, in what is then described as the tetrion in tetrionics. But we could equally well consider it to be a vortex, which has now been spun off and has its vortex motion on its own by itself. So when we look at the universe in that sense, then we find exactly the same principles of God and consciousness and omnipotence and all that, because those are the capacities of the quantum field as described by tetrionics. but it is not a political thing, and it is not a dogmatic thing. It is not an instrument for social organization. It is simply an explanation of how information at the foundation of the universe is the fundamental quality by which everything is connected. And in that way, it answers one of the papers which I wrote a long time ago, entitled The Blind Spot of Science. And the blind spot of science is our life, love, consciousness, and health. And all of those four are answered by the science of life, because in the science of life you can see that life, love, consciousness, and health are all based on tetrionics being operated by freedom of choice. In life, you can see that it is about the capacity to flip a quantum, to intentionally flip a quantum, and to thereby reverse the charge polarity, and by doing so invert the polarization of the boundary of a system. So by flipping the quantum, you can change your involvement. Love is the realization that however much you change your involvement and however much you polarize it into the opposite charge, you're still working with the same system, and that the system as a whole has not changed. It's just that your perspective with respect to the system has changed. So you still understand that everything is connected. Consciousness is the realization of that, that you are not only aware that nothing changed, but also that you are conscious that you are the agent of change, that you, by your flipping the quantum, by your use of operating freedom of choice, you decided to put yourself inside of the equation or outside of the equation. And consciousness is simply the realization that you are doing that and that you're able to do that. But that life doesn't change and love doesn't change. Simply you are changing your perspective in it. And health is the consequence of that, because if you understand that life and love and consciousness are the basis by which we operate in our body, then evidently you also realize that in doing so, you determine the integrity of your own identity with respect to the environment that you live in. And that's actually where you then see the psychosomatic principle, that by the choices that you make, you integrate yourself into the universe, or you disintegrate yourself from the universe. You put yourself in paradise or you put yourself in hell. That's the choice which you operate. And when you look at the quality of things, you will realize that. When you look at the quantity of things, you do not realize that. When you look at the quality of things, you realize that when you give money from one individual to the other, you empower somebody in their values, because you show them that you value them. In the quantitative sense, you think that if you have more money, you have more value. Actually, the opposite is the case, because if you have more money, you have taken that money outside of the circulation. And if you've taken it outside of the circulation, you disempower the circulation, you weaken the circulation. And by stagnating money, you actually did the opposite. And that is something which you find in the photonics. The photon has no rest mass. Money has no rest value. Money that's lying around is worthless. It's just scrap metal and scrap paper. But you cannot see that unless you see that the quantity of money is only a number. It has no value. It can only get value when it is put in action. The only moment that money gets value is by interaction, by transaction. It is by using the money to empower somebody else. And there it's important to realize that money is a representation of food, and that food gets value, more value, by putting animals or people in slavery, in prisons. And that means that that form of money is parasitical, and actually it is as is described by the story of Faustus, it is a construct of hell. While the opposite, when you realize that the quantity of money comes from the quality of the connectedness of people, that the value of the money is actually the measure of the trust that people have amongst each other, then you can take it from the level of quantity into the level of quality, and then you can see that when people qualify to help each other, that by the help that they give each other, they create an added value. And that value, just like the spin-off of the tetrion from the interaction of the quantum field, can then be stored as a token of it. But that means that money has only value if people create their own money. It is so fundamental, so simple, and it is so contrary to what people have been led to believe over the past 6,000 years. And that is also why I said that it is necessary to realize that what you can see happening at the quantum field is not what is being described in the religions, for the simple reason that those religions are looking at people as slave and food, and they look at money as fodder. So, giving somebody money, you actually give them food, and then in return they can do work for the slave keeper. But that is the model that you get when you look at the particular model of beings or entities in isolation. That's what happens when you call them subjects, that you control them by money, and that in themselves they are inert matter. And by looking at them as slaves, you don't grant them, or you don't realize that they have a soul. When you realize that all living beings have freedom of choice, then by choice you can have people get that understanding that together they can do more alone than alone. And that's the same what you find when cells divide and create organs and create an organism, as a result of which together they can do much more as a body than they can do as an individual cell. And it is that kind of exploration which I've been looking at. It's that kind of path that I've been exploring when I started to look at the matter and the materials of the physical universe in studying engineering. And I realized that we cannot understand how physical matter moves if we do not understand what kind of forces put it in motion. In science, they don't look at that because they look at energy, but they forget that energy is the internalized quantum field within the objects. And in science, they do not understand exergy, which is the input or the output of energy into the system by a direct flow out of the quantum field. So once you put that into the system, then you can see, and that's what I looked at in medical school, that in living bodies, the cells are able to work with this exergy and this energy. They can work with the flow of quantum flux through the system, and they can work with the quantum flow circulation within the system. They can actually switch between the two, which is what science called Maxwell Demon. So they can accumulate energy or they can diminish energy, for the simple reason that they can take in flow from the environment, or they can pump it back into the environment. They're the switchers between the two. And by doing so, they can reorganize tetrions as atoms, as molecules, as matter, and compose and create a body. And that becomes visible only once you realize that matter is not conscious, and that the patterns of coherence of matter do not originate from the matter itself. And It is by finding the work of Calvin Abraham and Tetrionics that everything became very simple and very understandable, and that these questions which I had about the relation between quantity and quality, or object and subject, or outsider and insider, or dead and alive, became very easy to understand, because in a way, in the science of life, I already had all the concepts in place of that difference between matter and consciousness, or objects and subjects, or had the inert and the driving force. What I lacked was precisely what Tetrionics provided, the integral system of showing that the quantum field is the driving force of everything. It is also the domain from which the manifest or material realm originates, and that in that sense it does exactly what the religion said, and that's the religions of all of the cultures of the world. They all have these creation myths, and all of them refer to the unseen mover in some way or another, and that what is formed and that what is moved as consequential to it, but not the origination of it. And in that sense it is then possible to see that what the traditional religions described, that is the quantum field or the information field that moves matter, is the opposite of what science tries to state, that from matter you would actually get consciousness. No, that's not not the case. In matter you can accumulate a consciousness, you can intensify it, you can multiplex it, and you can give it more ways to express itself, and that is what happened in the origination of biology, that simple amino acids became proteins, became RNA, became DNA, and as a result they could orchestrate cellular constellations, constructs around them. But those are simply the amplifiers or the computer hardware by which the software can express itself. And so the model of science is too often as if matter will create consciousness, and with the understanding of Tetrionics and the age-old description of the old religions, it is easy to see that's the other way around. That from qualities which are connected, you can have spin-offs, which you can then see as quantities. They will have lost their quality, but their quality is that they are now individual carriers of whatever spun them off. So they are reminiscent of that. And in that sense, they are memory modules, which then can be moved by the quantum field into different constellations, creating larger bits of memories and thus creating larger chunks of stored information. And at that sense, we can see that the universe as a whole is a quantum computer, which is quite funny, because when you see what's happening in the cells, you can see that they are actually actively operating quantum computation. And in the quantum computation, you are actually relating quantities to qualities, you are actually relating objects to subjects, or let's call them individuals, you're creating matter to connecting matter to consciousness, and then you can see that the actual equation of creation takes place of that interface, that a creation is a process, it is an equation in the scientific or the mathematical sense, but the equation takes place in the quantum field, and the output, the construct, the result of it is in the physical field. So in that sense, the software creates the hardware and the cells produce the body, and life creates the DNA, and there are many other ways that you can see that traditional healthcare had the better understanding of it, that from the qualities you can get the quantities, but not the other way around. So that brings me to the conclusion of this exploration of this understanding of the relationship between quantities and qualities. They're in different domains, they're in different connectedness, and they are different expressions of how we relate to the world around us. We can look at it as quantities, we can look at it as qualities, and by that choice we define ourselves in an either or situation. But by understanding that quantities and qualities are directly related, we can actually look at the connection between the two, and we can see that in the moment of measuring outside or measuring inside, that's where we change our involvement, and that is the pivot point where we actually experience our participation in creation, right in the midway point between quantities and qualities. And that is something which I already knew, and what I've been exploring for a very long time, and of which I had acquired all of the understanding of how it connects. But this is actually the first time that I speak about it and show how the connectedness exists, and more specifically how we operate with that connectedness within us. We are actually the pivot point where we link qualities and quantities, and where we give meaning to things that exist into existence of things.